All right. So why'd you do it, Matt?
Why did I do it? Well, because Royersford was a former industrial town that had fallen on hard times, and when a lot of the industry left, council really didn't do much to bring jobs back, and it kind of stagnated over 30 years, and I think it was time to change that.
Hi, this is Tony Heil with the podcast Why You Should Run, and once again, we're talking to a local elected official about why you should run for office. We've talked with different progressives all over the area, the country maybe. We're going to get some better people. With the idea of finding out who should run for office, why they should run, what their issues were, the challenges of running for office, and why you should run. Whether it's for county commissioner, whether it's for borough council, where I am. I'm Bridgeport Borough Councilman in Montgomery County, Pennsylvania. Or whether you should run for president. I'm sure we'll get some presidential candidates on here because 2020 is coming up and every other Democrat is running for president. Today, in this podcast, my guest is my friend Matt Stamen. Matt, thanks for joining us.
Thanks for having me.
And I know we've known each other for years in some way, shape, or form, but today we're going to be talking about why you ran for Royersford Council. Is it council?
Yes, council.
I got it wrong with Marty in the last podcast. Very hard to keep straight. So this is a cheating question because you listened to what Marty said, but do you have any idea how many elected offices there are in this country?
500,000.
That's right, 500,000. How'd you know? At least 500,000. So if you're listening to this and you're thinking, I wish there was something I could do, there are 500,000 ways to get involved in running for office. And we hope that listening to some of these great progressive leaders, some of whom are in have been in office or doing things for years, some of them who just gotten elected, will motivate you to take that leap and figure out what to do. So Matt, welcome to the podcast, and tell me a little bit about yourself. What got you interested in politics?
Well, I first started paying attention to politics as a teenager. I was in 11th grade, right when the Clinton impeachment was going on, and one of our government teachers' assignments was to watch C-SPAN and some of the proceedings and do a short little report on it. So I did, and I realized that I thought it was a giant waste of time.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I thought Republicans were sort of grandstanding, and just I thought it was a colossal mistake. So I asked my teacher, how can I get involved to make sure this doesn't happen again? And he said, well, you know, contact your local Democratic Party and see if you can get involved.
And your teacher is just saying, like, get involved no matter what. Like,
he obviously knew which side.
Obviously,
that's
what you're saying.
Yeah,
and not that we need to make this all about the Clinton impeachment, though that would be fun. Do you think that everyone around you was kind of feeling the same way, or because of where you lived, maybe it was like 50-50 or 70-30?
Yeah, I mean, I lived in a pretty tough area at the time. There were no Democrats there.
Right.
So when I contacted my local Democratic Party,
mm-hmm.
They said, well, you have a competitive congressional race in your district. It was Joe Hoffel running against John Fox at the time. And they said, why don't you knock doors in Limerick? And I thought it was a great idea until I started to do it. And
yeah.
Got some nice things said to me and doors slammed in my face. But that's how I cut my teeth. And
Joe won.
Joe did win.
And that helped, like, yeah. Do you think that Joe winning, I think, like, made it so that you were demoralized in terms of running?
Yeah, it definitely helped. And it was the first midterm that a president's party actually picked up seats
mm-hmm.
Since the World War II, I think. But
yeah, I remember that election. It was my freshman year in college. So I feel now I'm older than you. Well, I was older than you when we started this as well, but because it was also the year that Jesse Ventura won for governor of Minnesota, and that really, I'm never going to forget that election.
Yeah, I do remember that.
So you got involved then, and when did you didn't run for office like in 2000 because you were only 18 then.
No, yeah. Well, I thought every year was going to be fun when mm-hmm. we won every year, but then
boy, were you wrong.
My first election I voted in was 2000,
mm-hmm.
and you know, I thought Gore was going to be president, but you know, the Supreme Court had other ideas. So,
right. You know. And if you're listening, there's a really good podcast you're wrong about. I would definitely check out. They just talked about the 2000 election, and I'll never forget my friend running up our stairs in our dorm area, being like, "Yeah, Gore won because of whatever court decision that day," and then realizing that no, it didn't happen.
Tough time.
So, what did you continue being politically involved for years, or what did you do?
I did. I volunteered for other candidates pretty much every election between then and when I left to join the Marine Corps. I was out of the game for a little bit, but.
And when were you in the Marines?
2006 through 12.
That's a long time.
Yeah.
Is it a long time?
6 years. Yeah, it's about average.
Yeah.
Four, 6 years.
And I'm really glad that you're doing this. One, for anyone listening, when I mentioned this is a podcast I want to do, the first person that said, I'd like to do that is Matt Stateman, which I appreciate. Thank you. And, you know, I don't know. Is there a higher amount of veterans in office or a lower amount of veterans in office? Is that something?
Well, I think
I didn't ask you this beforehand to be prepared.
Yeah, I don't know offhand, but I do think it does seem, especially after the 2018 campaign, we elected a lot of new veterans to Congress.
And a lot of good veterans.
A lot of good veterans.
Including around this area.
Yeah, Joe Webster and...
Mm-hmm. Chrissy Houlihan.
Chrissy Houlihan.
Well, not the sixth, though. Is it the sixth?
Is it the sixth? Yeah. It's hard to keep them all.
Yeah. And was that something that you were happy about, with more veterans running?
Oh, definitely. Mm-hmm. I mean, we have so many issues that don't get paid attention to because, one, 1% of the population serves in the military, and two, even fewer of them run for Congress.
Right.
So it's definitely good that we have people who know what it's like for us to have a bit of a voice to change some of the things.
And from your time serving, has it been frustrating when you got there, when you were in the service or afterwards, hearing people talk about different issues? Like right now we're talking about a national emergency on the border, which we agree is an emergency, but does it get frustrating to see it and be like, no, you listen to someone, you would understand what the service is like or what the military needs or vice versa?
Especially since he's talking about using money for... earmarked for the military to build his stupid wall.
Right.
That's going to cause a real crisis in readiness for our armed forces. You know, God forbid anything happens around the world we need to respond to, we might not be equipped to do it.
And what did you, we don't need to get too much into your service, but like where did you serve type of thing? I know, but like for the podcast.
I was actually a reservist for most of the time I was in.
Mm-hmm.
And our unit was based in Reading.
But you are a very reserved person.
I am.
but you know about budgeting then from that, because you paid attention to it, so you understood it from all that.
I've seen firsthand how wasteful it can be.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, one example, we go to the rifle range, a lot of the times the armory guys don't want to put the ammo we don't use back in stock, so we just shoot it down the range at nothing.
Oh, well, that sounds like fun.
Yeah.
Now I know. Now I'm not going to want to fund that. But that service, that time being involved, that kind of, you've always been civic minded then, I would assume.
Yeah, I have. And then my contract ended in 2012, and I didn't reenlist, and I wanted to continue serving. So one of the party leaders suggested that I run for council in Royersford in 2013.
Mm-hmm.
So I did, and I found, Joe Gray from MCDC found a guy named Anil Dom who lived across town from me, who was also interested in running. So we ran together, and we were the first Democrats to run in Royersford in 12 years.
So it was the first time that Democrats had won in 12 years. And before then, it wasn't like it was a Democratic area 12 years ago. It was
they hadn't. A Democrat hadn't been elected in Royersford in 40 years. And a Democrat hadn't even bothered to run in 12.
Wow.
So they had, four straight election cycles without opponents.
And that just makes it so that the Republicans run against themselves, or are they like a good...
They just don't have opponents in the fall, and they get elected by default. And I think a lot of complacency had set in among the incumbents, whose average time on the council was, I think, 25 years.
I haven't done anything for 25 years.
Yeah.
I haven't even driven a car for 25 years. Meanwhile, not in a row, of course. But was that intimidating, knowing the history? Did you know the history there?
I did. I lived most of my life in that area, so I knew there was a lot of factories and things like that had closed down.
Mm-hmm.
And like I said, the council, I guess, was complacent and didn't really do much to try to bring jobs and industry back. So that's the main reason we wanted to try to change that.
What was pushback? Because I imagine the people who were on council were like, oh, was the response from them, you guys don't know how it works. Because that's how I heard about things when I first ran.
They didn't really give us a response because they didn't. I don't think they thought they could lose.
Mm-hmm.
And even on our side of things, nobody. There's three people that I know of that I thought we could win. It was myself, Anil, and Joe Grave.
Mm-hmm.
And Joe was basically our campaign manager that year, and surprise, we won. You know.
And for people who don't know, Joe Grave works for the County Democratic Committee. And I think one of the things, to his credit and to any committee, the thing you really want from a political committee is belief in other people, right? Like, if you had a person like Joe Grave there who was instead lazy or just told you no, and I've seen that in other counties, then you would be disincentivized to run, right? You would just be demoralizing.
Well, I think it's definitely a reason why people don't run.
Mm-hmm.
But we're lucky here in Montgomery County to have a good party apparatus behind us.
Yeah.
But at the same time, they're less likely to invest in areas that don't typically vote for us.
Right.
But I think places like Royersford and Bridgeport in 2013 kind of changed the thinking of that a little bit.
Yeah, Bridgeport hadn't been, when I ran in 2013, the same year you did, it had not been majority Democratic, I don't know if ever. And then suddenly it was because we ran.
And then I think that kind of changed the thinking a little bit, that we can compete everywhere.
Mm-hmm.
And it worked in 2017. We won in places like we had never won before. Collegeville, Trapp came very close. Limerick elected a Democratic supervisor. We took control of Collegeville for the first time ever.
Right, and I think that people don't realize that. They think the areas are conservative or liberal, wherever they live, or in the country or the county. And then, but it takes people running. And I always hear complaints from people like, oh, I can't believe the Democrats nominated so-and-so or the Republicans nominated that guy. It's like, they didn't nominate him. That person chose to run.
Absolutely. I think especially on the local level, every town has its own issues.
Mm-hmm.
And if you can find one that resonates with the voters, and you can win no matter what your party is.
Mm-hmm.
And I think that's a good reason to run, because locally you don't have to worry about what's going on in national politics. You don't have to get bogged down in arguments about abortion or things like that. You can just talk about the issues that affect your everyday lives in the town you live in.
Now, for a town like Royersford, like, had Royersford on a national level been trending Democratic at all? Like, did you see opportunity there?
Yeah, in 2012, we, for the first time that I can remember, we swept the ballot from Obama on down to Mark Painter, our state representative candidate, who also won that year.
So you knew that, well, if they can win, we can win. We just need people to run.
Yeah, we just need to get the work done on the ground, basically.
Right. And so one of the reasons that the motivations is someone's got to do this. Why not me?
Yeah, I mean, no one else did for more than a decade.
Mm-hmm.
No one else thought, you know, there were people in town who wanted change, but didn't think it was possible. But so I wanted to continue my service after the Marine Corps, so I ran.
Mm-hmm. And so what was the reception like? Because it's an area, like you said, that had not elected a Democrat in so long, but people were complacent. The people on the council were complacent. So what was the reception from neighbors and voters?
The thing that I think surprised me the most was the first few doors that we knocked on, the people talked to us and said, why do you want to know what I think?
Mm-hmm.
And what they meant by that was, you know, we've never had anyone talk to us before, and none of our some of them said I couldn't even pick out our council members out of a lineup.
Yeah,
I mean, it was the first time in a long time that anybody had come to them looking for their voice.
Yeah, I heard that when I ran too. And now, granted, the people who had been in our council, a lot of them have been great, and Democrats and Republicans. People said to me, "Oh, we never see our council member," and I was like, "It's not that hard." Royersford is bigger than Bridgeport, but like, it's not that hard to see people.
Yeah, I used to see our state reps at, you know, Giant or Wawa all the time, but I mean, no one knew who their council members were.
Yeah, well, my wife just saw our state rep at the grocery store the other day, and I said, "Well, did you say hi to him?" And she's like, "No, I didn't want to." So you won. Did you win big? Was it like barely won? Or
we ran. We modeled our campaign on what Josh Shapiro and Leslie Richards had done 2 years prior.
And Josh Shapiro and Leslie Richards ran for county commissioner in 2011.
And they became the first Democratic majority since the Civil War.
Which is crazy because, as you know, like, like Roy Ersford had been one went for Democrats in 2012 for the first time, really. But Montgomery County has been going for Democrats for 20 years now.
Yeah, it's funny because it's sort of sweeping west, I think, because Ronald Reagan used to use Montgomery County as an example of, you know, Republican conservative strongholds in the country. And I think it started in the east and kind of it's slowly sweeping west and it's becoming more and more Democratic. And I think a big part of that is places like us who have never elected Democrats before. And they saw how we've governed. And I think it sort of changed the way that a lot of people thought of what it means to be a Democrat.
Yeah.
And I think it changed, it opened a little bit people's minds to, you know, maybe I can support a Democrat.
And so if you run, if someone sees, well, I'm not really sure about electing a Democrat for Congress, but I've worked with Matt, and Matt's a good guy, so now they're more open-minded to vote for different things.
Yeah, it does seem that way. And a lot of people actually on Election Day come up to me and say, you know, I'm conflicted about this race or that race.
Mm-hmm.
What are your thoughts? Because they trust me as their council member who got into office and did everything that we campaigned on. We've done we've worked on everything that we said we were going to do, and that's uncommon in politics.
Yeah, and when you were running, were you able to figure out like what promises you could make? Because I know even when things I ran on that were small, like you don't want to make a promise that you find out, well, I was in over my head. I can't do that.
Well, we campaigned on economic issues mostly. We ran our downtown business district, had 12 vacant storefronts, and that was a majority of them.
Mm-hmm.
I think there were maybe 15 or 20. So we campaigned on recruiting businesses back to town or helping with, you know, working with the school board on tax abatement programs and things like that to lure businesses to town. And some of that worked. It was a little bit slower than we expected.
Right.
But I mean, today, every single one of those storefronts is filled.
That's amazing. And that's really cool. And that's a reason people should run, because I talk about this in our podcast with Beth Jacks here, but it's really neat to know you did something. That's a good reason to run, is even if, like, it's not written in any book, people don't give you credit years later, you know, like, hey, I said I was going to do it, and I did it, and even if I lose the next election, I know I can feel good about doing that.
Yeah, well, in particular, the non-discrimination ordinance that I proposed in 2017, I thought that was something that I might lose my seat over in that campaign.
Mm-hmm.
But when I proposed it, you know, I built up a certain amount of trust with people, and I got no pushback.
Yeah,
we even got it passed unanimously. We even got the two Republicans on the board to vote for it. So that's one of the things I'm more proud of that I've done.
Yeah, we passed a non-discrimination ordinance in 2018 in Bridgeport. Unfortunately, it was 4-3, but fortunately it passed. And the support from the public was overwhelmingly for it. It's, like you said, the county is changing. Who is a Democrat? Who is a Republican is changing in this country? Who's a liberal? These words are changing over the last decade or so.
Yeah, and I think a lot of that has to do with the work that some of us have done on council, but a lot of it also has to do with the hard right turn the Republicans have taken. And that's something we can use to our advantage if we're trying to run in places like Skipback or East Greenville or, you know, some of the more difficult, New Hanover, some of the more difficult parts of the county.
And that's something that if someone's listening in Iowa in a different kind of town or in Nebraska or in Wisconsin or in Florida, in an area that has gone for Republicans for local offices for 40 years, well, the Republican Party is different than it was then. And you can start changing the narrative, not just for this coming election 2019 or 2020, but for the next 10, 20 years.
Yeah, that's why one of my things I like to do is play the long game. And keep the bench moving and keep it, you know, filling our empty seats. And that way our party stays strong.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you look around the county or around the Philadelphia suburbs, look at Bucks County, a place like that. They've sort of withstood the wave that swept over, and they still have, they're the one collar county that is still majority Republican. And I think a lot of that has to do with the fact that they keep their bench moving, they keep their seat, their cycle, they have like self-imposed term limits on their county seats, so they keep their bench cycling through, and it keeps them young.
Yeah, that's something that both parties should think to do, is recruiting a bench no matter what. And not only that, but my feeling about Bucks County, the Republicans there that I know of, they're also keenly aware of the demographic changes and how they need to react to that.
Yeah, Brian Fitzpatrick is a good example of that.
Mm-hmm. Like, Brian Fitzpatrick sounds like a Democrat from other parts of not just the country, but the state. Like, if he was running against Scott Perry, who I would be great. I would be knocking every door for Brian Fitzpatrick because Scott Perry is not as good as Brian Fitzpatrick. Not as good as there as I can. So that's why you ran. That's why you want. That's why a good reason for people to get involved in these kind of offices. But and so we've guessed that one of the biggest challenges for you is that it was a conservative area for a Democrat to run in. Was that like the biggest challenge you think for you?
Yeah, a lot of people just wanted to complain about Obama or whatever.
Right.
But then we talked to them and we tell them why we were running, what we wanted to do. And we realized there really was a big hunger for change there.
Mm-hmm.
And we knocked on, I want to say, 15,000 doors. And there aren't even 15,000 doors in the borough. So we talked to everybody, I think, two or three times.
Yeah.
And it got to the point where we'd see them at Giant or,
mm-hmm.
or you know, somewhere. And they'd be like, hey, I remember you knocked on my door the other day. And I think a lot of them voted for us because we knocked on their door. Because we wanted to know what they thought.
And that is, to me, as someone who's run for office and knocked on thousands of doors for myself or other candidates, it's a very rewarding thing to get a good response at the door and then afterwards. So
it is. It sort of fires you up for the next door.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the times you'll get nobody home or people who don't want to vote for you. But then you get that person who really encourages you, and then that fires you up to keep going. And So, yeah, I that's my favorite part of politics is just knocking on doors and talking to people.
Yeah, and we've talked about other candidates that I run, whether it's Katie Muth, who ran and knocked on a bajillion doors, or others. And when you're running for Senate, you can't really knock on a lot of doors. But you can build up your bench and, like, you get a good perspective from doing it. So if, for example, you were running for Senate in a statewide race or something like that, your perspective of doing those kind of politics comes from that retail work you did.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, and to a bigger point, I mean, today's council members, school board members, whatever, or tomorrow's state reps, county mm-hmm. commissioners, governors even.
Yeah, my state rep, Tim Briggs, the only race he's won that he's run for, I believe, is state representative, but he's done so much other door knocking, so his approach to politics is that retail thing already before he even got into office.
I first met Tim on that Huffle campaign in 98.
Yeah, and he's cut his teeth on all this kind of stuff, and some of the doors have been slammed in his face, I imagine, but everyone knows him now. That was probably the biggest challenge, and I think it's a good challenge for people listening if you're considering running for office, because that's intimidating to people. You get past that intimidation of this neighborhood might not be for me, but people in general are willing to listen.
Yeah, especially if you have a good understanding of the issues and you know your people, basically. Mm-hmm. I mean, you can get almost anybody to vote for you that way.
Yeah, I've had many people. I have someone who is diametrically opposed to my general political beliefs, and he says he votes for me every time, and because I talk to him, and I find his views crazy, but he's a nice enough guy, and I appreciate his support.
Yeah, there's definitely a lot of those, but that you'll completely disagree with, but they'll vote for you every time because they believe in what you're doing.
Mm-hmm. And that helps a lot. And that you appreciate those votes even more than the people who just vote for you because they are voting for you for the party. So now we know those things. Are there any issues? You won re-election. I hope you won by a bigger amount the next time.
Yes, we only had one Republican opponent mm-hmm. this time.
So it was easy.
So yeah, it was a little bit easier than the first campaign. But I think I was more proud of that win because we got, when we were first elected, we didn't have a majority, but we were still able to get some stuff done by working with mm-hmm. the Republicans, some of the economic stuff. But
right.
And then we took a majority in the 2015 campaign,
mm-hmm.
but then we elected our first woman mayor in 2017. That's something I'm pretty proud of.
Yeah, she's pretty good.
Yeah, she is. She makes us all look good, I think. Yeah. But
and you change the face of what people will vote for mayor is different than what they'll vote for other things. So you change the face and the approach people would have to who they could vote for.
It's true. I mean, Jenna definitely does not look like your average person. She
looks like an average person. Like,
well, you know what I mean. Yeah. She's an Asian woman.
Right.
And
if you look back at Reuters for 20 years ago and you said, oh, Jenna's going to be the mayor.
If you look at Reuters for 5 years ago when I ran,
uh-huh.
I mean, all of our council members and the mayor were all white Republican men over the age of 60.
Mm-hmm.
The youngest of them was 60. And we appointed a woman to a vacancy in 2014, and she was the first woman to serve in 30 years.
Right.
And then we elected another woman in 2015. They were the first two simultaneously serving women ever. And now we have 7 seats in the mayor. Those 8 seats, 4 of them are women now.
Yeah.
We elected our first African-American council member in 2015. I mean, our board actually looks like the town now.
And I imagine your town is a lot like every other town in that the majority of the population is female. So, like, you start getting... There's not enough women in politics. There's a big celebration now that there's over 100 women in Congress. That's still, like, a quarter of Congress.
Yeah.
That's still a small percentage, comparatively.
That's one of the things I've worked on in politics for a long time, is getting more women involved. And we actually set out to make sure that we... find women candidates, and we worked with our police department also to hire more diverse officers. We had the first African American officer ever, and we have the first woman on our force now in 22 years. So that's something that's been a project of mine for a long time.
It's really important, and I think it's one of those things you can do on a local level, and it changes perception. So,
and I think a lot of it. I was raised by a single mom, and so I know the power of women. So that's something that inspires me to this day. So I think I shaped my views on a lot of things.
Good. I think it's good to have more men trying to get more women in power, because it will be a great day when Congress isn't 25% women, but is actually 51% female representing the country. And it's amazing that that's like a crazy idea.
Well, the good thing about that is I look at the candidates that have announced for president so far. I mean, the majority of them are women.
Right.
So
I mean, there's only 3, right, so far. But there's a bunch of people who are talking. I mean, there's Elizabeth Warren, Tulsi Gabbard.
Kamala Harris,
Amy Klobuchar, Kirsten Gillibrand. And say what you want about, you know, 2016 Hillary Clinton or 2008, but kind of paves the way from where people be like, yeah, why not?
Well, you think... I heard this story a while ago by a woman who was a teacher in Philadelphia somewhere, where it was a predominantly black school, and the project was, you know, what do you want to be when you grow up? And one of the kids said, I want to be president.
Mm-hmm.
And all the other kids laughed at him.
Right.
And the teacher was like, why are you guys laughing? And one of the kids in class said, we're black, we can't be president. So I think when Obama was elected, that changed the way a lot of people think. Like, those kids in Philly now have inspiration that I can do that someday.
Yeah.
Or, you know, Hillary Clinton paved the way for a lot of women to think, you know, I could do that. I could be Secretary of State. I could be a senator.
And even if I can't, like, I'm not going to have someone tell me I can't.
Exactly. Yeah.
And it's I'm really glad that we have 4 congresswomen from Pennsylvania now.
For the first time ever.
Right. And they're a team too. So now we know kind of the challenges you face and the kind of your motivation for running. Are there any issues that you're really motivated about, whether it's locally or whatever, that kind of keeps you going?
Yeah, I mean, there's some of them I can control and some are a little bit above my level.
Mm-hmm.
But like criminal justice reform is a big deal to me.
Mm-hmm.
For the past 9 years, I've worked at a psychiatric facility, and I see a lot of them who don't have the opportunities to fight their charges that they get sometimes. People kind of sweep them under the rug because of their mental health diagnosis, or, you know, they can't afford representation.
Yeah.
You know, things like that shape my views on a lot of things.
And there's things you can do on your local office. Even just bring attention to it. So good.
Yeah, well, we worked with our police department on a lot of that stuff to try and, you know, change the way that they police.
Yeah.
I mean, which is good for us, and it's good for the department, and it's good for the community. I mean, it's very difficult to be a police officer right now, but you know, they've kind of, I think, changed the way people look at police.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, there's a lot of people who think the police is their enemy, and there's a lot of, and I think that they've done a lot of community outreach things that we've kind of worked on, and they've changed that perception in a lot of ways. So,
and maybe there's some, we started a speaker series in Bridgeport. Maybe there's some things that we could take from what you did, invite even people you know to come and speak about some of these things. And how it can help our community.
Yeah, I'd be happy to do that.
Great. We've got something done today.
All right.
So that's an important issue where we know, like, we need the country, the federal government to do something, and the state government. And it really feels like there is bipartisan work on that. Like in Pennsylvania, Governor Tom Wolf and Republican Cheryl DeLozier, who really passed, you know, the the next camp with the recent laws on that, yeah. With help from the Eagles.
Yeah, like, right. Yeah, with Chris Long and Malcolm Jenkins.
Yeah, like they stepped up. Like that makes a lot big makes a big difference. There's like there's some momentum behind criminal justice reform.
Yeah, it's great to see.
It's something that I think 10 years ago you would not have seen.
And that's something not only as a local elected you can work on with your own police department, but you also have. Even if you represent a small town like we do,
mm-hmm.
we still have that title, and that will make our legislators more likely to talk to us,
right?
Rather than just some. You know, if I call Senator Muth's office, mm-hmm. and obviously,
which is nice, you can do that.
Yeah, I can. I just like saying Senator Muth, but like before, if I even before she was elected, if I would call Rafferty's office mm-hmm. and say, you know, Councilman Matt Stamen, I'd like to speak to the senator, mm-hmm. I would always get a call back.
Yeah,
so that's something you can use the weight of your office to change things that even are a little bit beyond your control.
And I believe that that's something that Senator Rafferty, when he was a senator, he would. You might be different parties, but he was open to that. It was something he wanted to talk about, so that's good. And you can talk to our district attorney in Montgomery County or the governor's mm-hmm. office and things like that. There's a lot of ways you can get involved as a local official.
Yeah, and then if you work on their campaigns when they run, they're more likely to you know, they know who you are. And
exactly, it's not so much you scratch my back. So you,
no, yeah, it's so you build relationships
right.
with them.
Exactly, like I. You may have been to something we've done in Bridgeport. I think, yeah, I know you've been to Bridgeport, but mm-hmm. I'm willing to help you because I know who Matt Stamen is, and you're an honest guy in politics, and I trust when we share the same values. So I would be more likely to help you because of that than someone that wrote me a $50 check
yeah,
who
absolutely.
I don't know.
Yeah.
So, though if you want to write me a $50 check, feel free to. So that's a big issue, but more importantly, the podcast is You Should Run. So do you think more people should run for office?
Absolutely.
Yeah. Why?
Because I mean, you want real change, that's the way to do it.
Yeah.
And you can affect change in your community, you can affect change in your state, and you can affect change in higher elections.
I mean, yeah.
Like we talked about earlier, if someone trusts you and sees what you're doing, and they come to the polls undecided, if we had Democrats or progressives or whatever elected in every single municipality in Pennsylvania who did the same thing on election day, Trump wouldn't have carried the state.
Yeah. Because he only won by like
an average of 7 votes per precinct.
Yeah, that's nothing.
And I talked to at least 10, 15 people that day.
Mm-hmm.
So if we had Democrats elected everywhere, that just builds from the ground up.
I think that there are some states that are out of one party's control because the other party has done so much ground level work. And you look at Texas, for example. Like, Beto O'Rourke didn't win. But he built up this bench of Democrats now
exactly,
with
yeah.
him that I think, hopefully in 2020, but maybe in the not too distant future, now there's more people that run for all sorts of things.
Yeah, absolutely. And there's more people. There's a bigger army behind the mm-hmm. potential candidate for governor there, or senate, or president.
Because mm-hmm. it was hard for them to find a candidate for governor in Texas last year.
Yeah,
they had to search for someone, and whereas now in Pennsylvania, like in when the next because since Tom Wolf was term limited, there's like. A dozen people, Democrats are going to run for his seat.
It's a good problem to have, though.
Yeah.
To have that bench behind you.
Right. It's a lot better to be that than being what we've seen in Montgomery County 20 years ago, where we need sacrificial lamb candidates. Like, someone's got to run for county commissioner. Let's
yeah,
get
exactly.
Marty's dog to do it.
Yeah. And look at some of the legislative races we flipped. A mm-hmm. lot of those were in areas that elected Democrats locally for the first time.
Yeah, and there were some candidates that won or came close that were not anyone's radar of winning.
Yeah, I mean, look at the 150th, the 146th, the seats we've been trying to flip forever and have been mostly unsuccessful.
Mm-hmm.
And we have more people getting involved now, obviously, because of the political climate, but we also have a bigger bench of local electeds.
Mm-hmm.
And that changes, I think, more than people think.
Yeah, it makes a big difference. I think it's more... My first election in this area, I've been involved in politics since 2002, but I remember 2004 working for Lois Murphy for Congress, and I had someone looking over my shoulder at election results, and they're like, oh, in that precinct, you're getting 78%. I was like, yeah, but we should be getting 80%. There's only so much wiggle room once you're in a precinct where you can get 70%, right? Like it's,
yeah.
But I would rather, so you can only move so much there in a positive direction, whereas... In Royersford, well, suddenly you can go from 38% up to 50%. That's a jump.
Exactly.
That helps everyone up the ticket.
And we did that. I think when I won the first time, we won by, I think, 84 votes, which doesn't sound like a lot, but in a place that had never elected a Democrat,
mm-hmm.
it's a pretty decent margin.
Mm-hmm.
But when we won, especially particularly Jenna's race, she won by over 200 votes. Mm-hmm. It's a huge jump.
Yeah. And out of the percentage of votes, that's a significant percentage.
Yeah. I think it was something like 68% or something like that.
Well,
which is incredible.
Yeah, and it's really good, and it's going to make it more likely for other Democrats and progressives and other people and other diverse people to run as well.
Absolutely.
I see it's possible. So it's possible not just to run, but to win. I appreciate you running in these tough races, tough districts.
It's been worth it. Absolutely been worth it.
And I'm glad to hear it's worth it. So for anyone considering running, one, get involved in your local party in whatever shape or form you can. And I do recommend runforsomething.net. It's a really nice little resource for people to figure out races to run or what to do, things to think of. Are there any other resources you'd recommend?
Offhand, Run for Something is a very good organization. Yeah. And I know a lot of our candidates for legislative races this year had been recruited by them or worked with them and were successful, some of them.
Good, and that's a good thing. And then if you're under 40 or under 35, check out the YEO, Young Elected Officials Network. I'm involved, but I'm aging out.
Yeah, almost aging out, yeah.
A lot of the Young YEO Network, a lot of people who are now in higher offices, or Brendan Boyle spoke at an event a few years ago,
yeah.
And he's always going to look like a young official. He's going to be 80 years old looking like he's 16. Kyrsten Sinema, now a senator from Arizona, she was a YEO. So a lot of people who've moved to the ladder did it through some of these organizations like that and Run for Something.
Another organization I want to give a shout out to locally in Montgomery County is the Montgomery County Democratic Women's Leadership Initiative.
Mm-hmm.
Their goal is to elect more women, and they were a tremendous help to giving us almost a majority on our board. They, I think, in the last three elections provided, I'm going to say, roughly 20-25% of our budget. And they were extremely instrumental in helping elect women. So I would absolutely recommend reaching out to them if you're a woman that wants to get involved. Or if you're a man like us, I mean, I try to support them when I can because they do great work. So
yeah, and it's really good to have those kind of, I don't want to say women as a demographic, but those different organizations that then if you're the only woman running or the first woman running, you have that bench of support. Not that bench, but that backing.
Yeah, it's,
and you know you're not the only one, you're not out there by yourself.
Yeah,
so if you have that kind of organization in your county, and it's great what people like Joanne Olszewski have done in Montgomery County for years to make that happen, and a lot of other people, if you don't have that, then just do it and make that organization, even if you don't run for office yourself, right?
Yeah.
So find that in your area, find the other elected officials, and see what you can do together. So thanks, Matt, for running.
Thanks for having me.
Thanks for being on our podcast. And if you're listening to this and it's 2019 or 2020 or it's a few years from now in the future and we're all either in flying cars or in an apocalyptic hellscape, I hope that you consider to run for office.
Do it.
Thanks a lot.